them.
Pusho.
Have you started yet?
Yeah, we just started right now.
Oh, okay.
That was the cue. That was the cue.
I'm sending you the information. Okay. So we're doing a post show, a quick post show. We didn't do a pre show.
Birdemic, Shock and Terror.
Quite a movie, huh?
Oh my God! Last week before the after the show, we watched. Well, last week with some leftover Black Tuesday, we watched Birdemic, Shock and Terror, and I got wasted and had a wonderful time doing it. I got to the point where I couldn't sit on the couch because the room was starting to spin, so I finished the movie standing up beside the couch.
We watched the Riff Tracks version too, so
yes, that probably
you know. That helped. It was Mystery Science Theater, you know. It was like watching, you know, what's that one? Space Mutiny, mm-hmm. where it's a bad movie, but also helps to have funny guys making funny jokes about
but
it.
But I also think being as drunk as I was made it even better.
Yeah. So pounds.
The audio editing, oh my goodness. There's so much noise on the mics. And when they would cut from one guy to the girl in a conversation, you could tell it was recorded on different days.
Right. Well, not like that. Okay, so the audio editing was bad. The special effects were atrocious. They didn't ever actually set up locations. So they just, like, they had tons of scenes of people parking. And then they, like... This was a birdemic that was happening and killing things, but they would do it on the side of the road and traffic would be going both ways because no traffic's been stopped.
Right.
So yes. It was, and the story made no sense. There was no, the characters were milquetoast. So there was no character development whatsoever. There was no story development whatsoever. You don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The first half of the movie has no birds in it.
And the second half have the worst birds ever.
And
there was not a live bird in the movie.
And shooting guns.
Not even accidentally was there a live bird in the movie.
Ridiculously, like, shooting guns out the window, and they just have ass loads of bullets, and then, like, you see them, like, doing burst, and all of a sudden you see an image of, like, a CGI bird falling out of the sky. And then, like, also birds would dive into things and explode. It was absolutely ridiculous. But the thing that made it fun was that it was earnest. You could tell that the guy who was trying to do this was trying to make a point about environmentalism and about...
There was a couple preachy yeah. scenes about environmentalism out of nowhere. You know, the guy was, you know, not a natural-born American or anything like that. He's from Vietnam. The director, producer, writer guy.
James Nguyen or something like that, yeah.
Nguyen,
okay.
Nguyen's how you say it. I'm wondering if he thought... The birds, go on YouTube and search for Birdemic Shock and Terror and just watch some of the compilation clips and you'll see the best parts of the bird CGI. Like, there's that one scene where they have the double-decker Half Moon Bay bus right there. And there's like six birds like just flapping their wings, not moving.
Yeah.
So when he's watching what the CGI guy came up with, he can't be deluded enough to say, yeah, that's good. It has to be, that's all I can afford.
I'm sure that was what it was. Because, yeah, I'm sure he had it in his mind. Because like they're waving hangers at floating birds at one point. I'm sure he had in his mind that, you know, there would be this active thing and these birds would be terrifying. And it would be like Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds and stuff like that. It's nothing like that because the birds are just unbelievably ridiculous, and it takes the whole tone of the movie, which is already stupid and absurd, and just, you know, magnifies it. And I'm sure the director was not looking at this wanting it to be a cult classic comedy, but wanting it to be, he wanted to make a point and wanted to make it to be a mediocre, terrible B movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned into mediocre, awesome B movie.
Well, you know, part of it is when your title is Birdemic, Shock and Terror, and you spend $50 on CGI.
Yeah,
That's what's going to happen, you know?
One thing that you point out, which is interesting, is that they actually did a good... whoever was doing the B-roll was competent. You pointed out that, for instance, when he was doing... Like the main character does a point where he's... He gets a lot of money because he's a terrible salesman. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to do venture capital, and you notice it was in an area where venture capitalists meet.
Yeah.
So there's some
knowledge.
But it
was also convenient because it was made in Northern California. Right. I mean,
it was made in Half Moon Bay, which you said you visited. So
yeah,
you've
actually,
seen
some of those
places.
Scenes, like the scenes where they were like in the beach scrub, you know, like, and when they were down on the beach, I stepped foot there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say I'm 90% positive some of those scenes, like some of those beach walkways and boardwalks and whatnot, I had been on. It's just a little bit south. We cut across the mountains and drove up the river, or up the river, up the ocean, and we're going towards Devil's Slide. And when
it's
we
a really
were
big river,
and when we were there, Highway 1 was closed at the Devil's Slide. Half Moon Bay has just been south of the Devil's Slide, and like as far as you could get before they had the road blocked off was this one beach parking lot, which was in the movie, and you could and all that stuff. So a lot of it seemed familiar. they went to when they left for the venture capital, they went to what's it called? It's
I don't know.
Sand Hill Road, which is it's famous for the venture capital. So they got the B roll from the right place and
selling solar panels. He couldn't say solar panels.
He couldn't say anything.
Panels.
He couldn't walk, he couldn't
He was walking strangely. The chick was cute.
Mm-hmm.
And not a terrible actress. Everyone else was absolutely
so
terrible.
So if you had to pick a favorite scene.
A favorite scene.
Or maybe, okay, so instead of favorite scene, maybe what's your favorite,
here's my favorite moment.
Who's the person that's in charge of the plot and the consistency? What's that called? It's the
script supervisor. Well,
what's your favorite lapse of script supervision?
Probably my favorite, like, ridiculous what the hell was going on was when they go down to the beach the first time, and there's a dude, there's like a professor dude, and he says, "Don't come any closer," and then just start walking closer to him, and then he starts to tell him, like, global warming is doing this, and the scene stops, and they go away. That was just ridiculous. There's also the dude in the forest, but that at least
how did the dude in the forest get set up? I can't remember that. I was a little too drunk.
they went out to look for, I don't know what they were doing, but then they saw something. He pulled up a gun. It's like, hey man, peace.
That's it.
Yeah, but no. Yeah. So, but my favorite scene probably was when there are two scenes. One is when they pull over and they find the children. With the dead parents, and all of a sudden the children are just happy, and Riff Jack guy's like, "Ooh, new mommy."
That was a good scene.
My favorite scene is when they go to a convenience store after that, and they're just like, they're here's a thing of water we'll just pull out, and there's a couple sandwiches, we'll grab that, and then they're also like looking at champagne bottles and things like that. It was so ludicrous and out there. That was the point where everything just kind of, the entire structure of the movie fell apart, and you were just at that point.
I'm going to say that there was a very telltale sign early on, and the Riffjack guys picked it up, and I love it. And that's when he's sitting in the diner, and before he even orders, right, he has an orange juice and water and a bottle of water. All sitting on the table, mostly drank.
Well, you also got to love the opening where it's like, there's an opening where there's driving along and there's music and it sounds like the music is going to end, and then the music restarts again and it's still driving and it sounds like the music is going to end, and then the music restarts again. This is like four times.
So we got 2 minutes to meet your goal.
We got a little bit over. Birdemic is a terrible, horrible movie. You said you liked it better than The Room.
I do. I like it better than The Room.
I mean, The Room is the Room is so much there's so much more like terrible because it's
more terrible. Yeah, it's so terrible. I can't even watch the Riff Trax version the whole way through.
It's all green screen and cardboard sets. Whereas this they actually went to locations.
This one's terribly fun though.
Yeah.
And the room is so terrible. I can't even watch the Riff Trax version the whole way through.
The room is an awful movie, but it's got so many ridiculous things. This thing doesn't have any softcore porn elements to it. That helps. Just the watchability, because those softcore porn scenes are gross.
Tommy Wiseau. It's also better than Nude Nuds with Big Guns, which is I had you watch a little bit of that one.
You showed me like a scene or two, but no, I didn't really watch it.
It's nearly. I mean, I don't think it's gained. It's actually gained some of the cult classic type status, right? The production house was actually cracking down on BitTorrent and piracy of that movie because people wanted to see the shitty movie so bad. So some people got, you know, their shit fucked up by pirating Nude Nuns with Big Guns. And they're, you know, going after them pretty hard.
Well, why wouldn't you? You know, you're not going to pay for that.
That movie seems... It's just like The Room. It seems three times as long as it really is. And you know, Birdemic Shock and Terror seems, you know, to run at normal speed, not in a time warp like those other ones. All right, so how'd we do this week?
Get an orders report. That'll give you an idea.
Yeah, I got the orders report here.
We got some good stuff coming in.
Okay.
There's some interesting stuff that we got this week, so thank you.
Ooh, someone bought one of my recommendations, the stainless steel beer growler. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have a pick?
Not yet. Oh, this is a different growler. It's cheaper than the one that I suggest. Good call, person who bought the Kegwerk stainless steel beer growler, 64 ounces. It's only $31.95 and free shipping. Because I had another one on the Amazon store. But this one's a better price. Okay, that's not my item, though. Forgive me, Greg.
No, by all means.
It's a beer-related item that we need to link up on that store.
Okay, so I'm wondering about either that or that. Okay. Choose, but choose wisely.
Some interesting things here. You bought some more ghee?
Yes, that was me. Okay, so I bought... On here, the Dungeon. Oh, I didn't mention I played Dungeons and Dragons for the first time. This week.
Did you nail it?
Yeah, no. We made a mage for me. He made him a little bit more advanced. Didn't start out level 1. Started out level 7, so he gave me a little bit more because the rest of the group is at that level, so it was a little easier for me to survive. But in the story of Dungeons and Dragons, the group that I came, they were being chased by these giants who were raping one of the characters. it's a silly game. And we killed them, and at one point I had summoned monsters, and they were almost all dead at the point when I had finally summoned them. When my summoning was complete, it took me 3 turns. So I had these like 6 goblins, and so after they killed the final guy, I told them to rape the dead bodies of the giants. I figured turnabout is fair play. So yeah, that was funny. It took like an hour and a half to actually construct the character. Making a new character is the longest and most arduous part of D&D, and then it gets into the fun.
Okay.
So yeah, so the player's handbook is there, and also I bought the ghee, I bought the macadamia nut oil, and it should be on here. I bought a whole thing of dice. But
I don't see the dice.
No, yet. The dice hasn't shown up. But
the Fitbit scale, that was you or not?
No, that was not me.
I'll talk about that. But actually, I probably like the stainless steel growler more.
Okay, talk about that. Talk about whatever you want.
Well, let me see. Is this growler the same? Because the growler I like is a double. It's like a thermos, right? So it's a double walled thing, so it'll actually keep your beer cold too. This Kegworks Growler. Is this thing double-walled? Made of food-grade 18-8 stainless steel with no plastic liner. Replaceable and cleanable food-grade silicone seal. Acid-edged Kegworks logo. Passivated to ensure fresh flavor. Is double-walled. Tired of your boring old glass beer growler? Well, the future is called and suggested you upgrade to convenience and elegance of the sheer awesomeness of the 64-ounce food-grade stainless steel growler. They said awesomeness in the description.
Yes.
It does
say keep the silicone seal away from children. I don't know why.
They can swallow it and choke on it.
From the silicone seal?
Yeah, it's like the, you know, it's a swing top, right? So it has a washer, right?
Oh, okay.
So they just don't want you choking on the washer.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to see if it's insulated or double-walled or something like that.
It doesn't seem to be.
Okay. Oh, no, because it comes with an insulated growler bag. So it's more like a flask, right?
Right, yeah.
I'd have to do a side-by-side comparison, because the one that I like is the... let's go to craftbeerradio.com. You can follow along at home and go to the Amazon store. It's under CBR-approved items on the front page. And there is the Hydro Flask insulated stainless steel wide mouth. And it's kind of like a Nalgene bottle screw top on the top,
uh-huh.
But it's a double-walled thermos, stainless steel thermos.
But it's so, not it's not 64 ounces.
No, it is.
It is?
Yes, it's 64 ounces.
Oh.
You actually can choose the different sizes. You can choose black stainless or black.
But this looks like a growler, so people may be more willing to fill it. You know, if you brought that to a place.
Northern Brewer. Or actually, was it Stone? Stone sells stone-etched versions of this Hydro Flask.
Right. But I'm still saying, right. Like, if you bring a growler to most places, they'll understand. If you bring one of those, they may say, that's not a growler, even if it's 64 ounces.
It's 64 ounces. But this thing will keep the beer cold, like, without any special insulation for, like, a day.
This is still cool looking. I mean, it's really cool looking.
Oh, the awesome. Other one? The Kegworks?
Yeah, the Kegworks thing looks awesome. That'd be just a cool, like, conversation mm-hmm. piece. you know, and as long as you don't have to even buy the thing, you know, the thing that comes with the growler bag, you can just, you know, as long as you keep it chilled, you're fine. It's just the thermos thing will stay colder longer, but eh.
You can get the Hydro Flask for $38.75 if you want the stainless steel 64 ounce.
And this version. One was $31.95 for this stainless steel beer, mm-hmm. Kegworks stainless steel beer growler. I think it looks awesome. I really think it looks awesome.
If you're listening and you bought the Kegworks, we would love to pick your brain about your choice and how well it actually works once you get it. So,
and whatever else is in your brain, you know, bugs and things like that. I like
probably a lot of neurons. Some blood.
My pick for Amazon Honest is the Zyzel PLA-407 Home Plug AV 200 Mbps Powerline Wall Plug Adapter. This is really cool. This is Powerline Networking. Okay. This is... I remember, like, 10 years ago reading about people saying this was possible. And then, like, 5 years ago, people were starting to come out with things. So the idea is that you already have your... Instead of having to install... install wires in your house, your power lines are already there,
mm-hmm.
and they can carry the signal as long as it's sufficiently insulated, right? I mean,
well, it's not a voltage signal. It's somehow they're able to demux the power from the signal thing, and power companies do it. They can send signals across high tension lines and things. So they send data across their high tension lines. And this is the same kind of thing where you're sending data across. Now, this is limited to 200 megabits per second.
As opposed to a gigabit.
Actually, 200 megabits per second is a lot better than what it used to be. It used to be 10 megabits per second. So that's not too shabby, because your internet connection at home is probably not more than 200 megabits per second.
Oh yeah, you're not going to get more than that from the internet. I mean, it's really unlikely you'll get more than that from the internet. So if you're just doing internet stuff, I mean, transferring from one computer to another could be a lot faster if you have a gigabit. But if you're just doing internet stuff, that's great, and you'll get plenty of good speed from it. Now, it does require, I think, you would have relative. I mean, if you have really old power lines, you're not going to get the 200 megabit, right? If you have like a really old house.
Yeah, I'm not an expert. It's hard to tell them exactly what the requirements are. But if you're in a place where Wi-Fi is not a good fit, you want something wired, these are $50 for a starter kit, which is two units, you know, an injector and an extractor. That's not a bad speed.
Yeah.
I don't know how reliable they are. You know, it might be one of those your mileage may vary type things.
The other thing you could do with it is maybe you have a big house, or your house is made of something so your Wi-Fi doesn't really cover it well, so you can put one on one of your Wi-Fi routers, transfer, go to another one, have another Wi-Fi router.
It probably would be better than doing a wireless bridge.
Yeah.
You know, using this to bridge your Wi-Fi routers would probably be better than doing a wireless bridge. It's funny. I used to have three Wi-Fi routers in my house to cover the garage. Uh-huh. I'm sorry for banging the microphone with the pencil. Covering the garage and the upstairs and down here. Since I got this new Buffalo one, it covers everything. The signal's a little weak in the garage, but it covers up. I have the Western Digital TV live streamer in my bedroom, which is the farthest run. It's up two floors on the other side of the house. Bandwidth is fine. And that thing has, you know, a USB Wi-Fi adapter on it, and it's in the back, and it's sitting on top of the cable TV box, so it has to go through a cable TV box to get down to the floor. I'm shocked, because that's a long run.
Well, they jumped up to 5 gigahertz, that really helped in terms of its penetration power.
No, opposite.
Really?
Lower frequency is better for penetrating
power.
Yeah, no, 5 gigahertz does not penetrate walls like 2.4 does.
Huh. 2.4 is what your microwave works at.
Yeah, that's the problem with that is it works, it's 2.4 is in the range of where your microwave works.
It's not exactly, but it's, yeah.
Yeah. And if you have cordless phones in your house still, those are generally 2.4 gigahertz. But the 5.5 gigahertz won't go through as many walls. We see that at work where the 2.4s will reach the hallway across the floor, but the 5s don't. They don't. The higher the frequency... You think, imagine the wavelength is shorter, right? Mm-hmm. So when it goes into a wall, if like the wave can't, you know, if the whole wavelength is, it fits in, it's not, this is like learning chemistry in eighth grade where they tell you the wrong thing, but it's almost true. You know, if the wavelength is shorter than the thickness of the wall, it doesn't get through. You know, it's kind of like that.
It's more about energy gaps. It's quantum mechanical in nature, but no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it makes sense. But
I mean, that's why submarines use ultra low band.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So like the wavelength.
It's several meters, right? It's like four or five meters.
So like 5 gigahertz, the wavelength. I don't know, but it's probably in the millimeter range. I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then to do radio. Underwater from a submarine, they use ultra low band, and it's a wavelength of several meters, like you said. But you're trading bit rate. You can't transmit a lot of data, but it has penetrating power. So that's kind of the trade-off.
You have to hope your code is right. It's good. Your coding, because you don't want people to intercept that. Because that's important data, usually.
Right. All right. So anything else you want to do before we wrap this up?
No, I think that's it. I apologize for making it into a short show last minute, but I did want to get a show in, and so we did that. Hope you enjoy our Pittsburgh Crafty Radio coverage next week, assuming we get press passes, which I don't see any reason why we wouldn't.
Unless we go into like free events and pay in our own way. Those were just the ticketed events I asked for passes for, so we'll see. We'll see, it'll be kind of a slap in the face if we don't get any Pittsburgh passes. And, you know, I got a free ride to, like, anything I wanted in Philly Beer Week a couple years ago.
Right.
Anyway, thanks for listening. See you next time.
See ya.